listening to The Ouachita Chronicles.
Hey, Jody.
Hey, Ashley.
It's a absolutely, I'd say beautiful, but it's completely totally blustery day here in the Ouachitas, is
very
it not?
Windy.
Blustery.
Is that the word?
Yes.
Blustery?
Uh-huh. Man.
We've used a lot of big words today.
We've used
so
a lot of big words today. But we've also talked about our beloved Ouachitas quite a bit.
We rubbed them in the face of the Ozarkian.
We did. I guess he technically was an Ozarkian.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, but we did.
We were just like, and we're better.
We're better. Okay. Hey, but he, as you will hear in the episode, he confirmed that we truly are the best mountain range in Arkansas.
We're
just
mountains,
gonna say,
they're hills.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, shit.
So anyways, today we had on as our guest Brooks Blevins. So Brooks is a professor of history at Missouri State University.
That's so fun.
Yeah. So he is Missouri State University's first Noel Boyd Professor of Ozarks Studies. Ozarks Studies. That's pretty dang cool. He has written 7 books, and in addition to those works, he serves as editor of the University of Arkansas Press's Chronicles of the Ozark series.
So he's chronicled in the Ozark, and he's chronicled Ozark today.
He's the Ozark Chronicle and the Ozark Studies series. He also produced and co-wrote the liner notes for 2 collections of recordings of traditional Ozark music, Sounds of the Ozark Folk, the 1963 Arkansas Folk Festival. That would have been killer.
Oh, don't you know.
And Sounds of the Ozark Folk, Volume 2, Middle Americana. He also serves on a bunch of boards. He co-hosts a regional history and culture segments on Ozark Highlands Radio. And he chairs the Ozark Folk Cultural Center Commission, which oversees Arkansas's Ozark Folk Center State Park.
I feel like Mr. Brooks might get down at a festival or two.
I feel like he might.
That's really cool.
Did we? That was the other thing that I wanted to mention while we were talking about him, not while we were talking to him, but while we were talking about him, was this list of books that he has authored, because I think that some of them have some pretty interesting names. He's got a whole like History of the Ozarks collection, right? You know, volumes 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. But he's also got Ghosts of the Ozarks, Murder and Memory in the Upland South. He's got Arkansas. Yeah. Arkansas.
With a W.
What did that one say? How Bear Hunters, Hillbillies, and Good Old Boys Defined a State. He's got Hill Folks, and he's got Cattle and Cotton Fields, and he's also got a history on Lyon College. So that's pretty interesting stuff.
That's neat. Yeah. That, cotton to cattle. I feel like that could fit right into my autobiography right there.
Oh, my gosh.
From the Delta to the farmlands up here. So it was really interesting.
Well, he's super duper knowledgeable, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a PhD. And we had him on the show because, you know, as you'll hear, he's coming to Mena next week.
Are you going to go with me to watch the show?
Yeah, this one I will go to. I will actually attend an event.
You'll actually be I'm tired of you ghosting me.
I'm Casper lady. I don't know what to tell you. I'm Casper.
I've had to date Trey more than normal lately. I've had to date you in public more than Ashley lately.
He's prettier than I am.
Yeah. You're awful pretty, Ashley.
Thanks a whole lot. Thanks a whole lot. So, basically, from the Ozarks to the Ouachitas and everywhere in between, Mr. Blevins has done a whole lot of studying on Arkansas history. But you knew who else is... are they from the Ozarks to the Ouachitas to in between? Or are they just in the Ouachitas?
Yeah, Boonville is...
Boonville.
Is the Ozarks.
Boonville is the Ouachitas.
Is it still
Mount Magazine
is
the Ouachitas. That is very true. So I was going to try to connect to the Ozarks and say that Don's had a location, but Don's, they're loyal to us, Ouachita.
They're loyal to the Ouachitas. They said let Walton's have Ozarks.
Mountain folk. They're just hill folk up there. We're mountain folk down here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe you've just built yourself a brand new cabin on the side of one of our beautiful mountains and you need to furnish it. You head on down to Don's Easy Pay.
Just like the pioneers did.
Just like the pioneers. Yeah, I'm sure they called up.
You know what the pioneers didn't have? They didn't know that the price on the piece was the price that you pay. They didn't know that.
So, yeah, Don's, great sponsor. Thanks. Now let's hear a little bit about Arkansas history from Dr.
Brooks
Blevins.
Welcome to this episode of the Washita Chronicles. I'm your host, Ashley Smith, along with my co-host, Jody.
Good morning.
How are we doing today, Jody?
Fantastic.
Are we good?
We're good.
It's a pretty day.
It's a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day.
Got all of our meetings out of the way for the week, maybe.
It's Thursday. Oof. It's Thursday. It makes me excited. So today's guest and long time listeners, you'll know that to expect a little bit of a lag because today's guest is coming to us via Zoom. And you know, when we do these interviews, there's always a little bit of an audio glitch there, but bear with us because this is a very interesting topic, or we feel it is, mm-hmm. don't we?
Absolutely.
So today's guest is Mr. Brooks Blevins, and he is an author mm-hmm. and a professor. Anything else to add to that?
A comedian?
Comedian? Yeah. Comedian?
No, I'm no, I noticed they sent me the press release for this thing next week, and I noticed it said something about a comedic performance, which suggests that I'm a comedian, but I'm definitely not.
Well, the pressure's on now.
Yeah, I don't want to fool anybody or think I'm trying to pull somebody's leg, but there are funny elements to the presentation, mm-hmm. but it is definitely not a comedic performance. That would fall flat on its face, I guarantee you.
Maybe we just like to poke fun at ourselves here. So that's why we, when the press release got put together, we're like, it's comedy. No, but you are coming to, you're coming to MENA. What is that next week? Mm-hmm. Correct.
The 12th
to UARM. Oh gosh, what is the...
To the Washita Center.
Washita Center. I blanked. How could I blank on Washita? Coming to the Washita Center next week for a presentation. And I know the college is really looking forward to it. I cannot talk this morning. I know the college is really looking forward to it.
Plug it back in.
Turn it on and turn it off, turn it back on. That's what we need to do with life. Anyways, so they asked that we have you on as a guest, and we totally agreed because this is a very interesting mm-hmm. topic. You were not on our radar, but this is the kind of fun stuff that we like to visit about. And it coincides very well with, you know, this podcast. I'm not trying to toot the horn here, but it does have listeners across the U.S. It does have listeners in other countries. And
they probably wonder about our Arkansas dialect.
Exactly. Exactly. And there has been times that I've gotten, I got a text from a girl who was from here, was a big listener, but she moved off somewhere to the Great Lakes region. And she goes, I've turned all my friends onto your show. And I was like, oh, that's great. Like, you know, what do they like about it? She goes, they like listening to y'all's accents. Yeah. It wasn't even about the topic. So.
Right. Right. Well, whatever gets people to listen.
So exactly. Where are you from? Let's take it back to the beginning.
I'm from Izard County, which is in north central Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I grew up about 45 minutes south of the Missouri state line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Went to school there, graduated, all that good stuff.
Right. I graduated from a little high school called Mount Pleasant, which no longer exists. As a matter of fact, all the schools I went to have since been consolidated out of existence. And
mm-hmm. So you grew up in little towns. Those are little towns.
Right. I grew up on a farm in about 3 miles outside of a community that had only a post office and a store and a school.
So you were saturated in this culture from the very, very beginning.
I actually grew up on my grandparents' farm that my parents eventually bought when I was about 12 years old. And so I grew up just up the hill from my grandparents, and we were surrounded by mostly relatives, mostly the brothers and sisters of my grandma and grandpa and other, you know,
the cousins and all of
And so most of what I talk about in my presentation just comes from stuff that I heard when I was a kid, and I'll occasionally throw in things that I've come across in my studies, but 90% of it's just based on the dialect and the grammar and the vocabulary that I heard growing up mm-hmm. in Izard County, Arkansas.
So what are, it's kind of jumping ahead here, but we didn't really, which we'll do that. We didn't really talk about exactly what topics, you know, he teaches mm-hmm. at the college mm-hmm. and what this presentation is about. So what is your specialty?
I am actually a historian. I'm the presentation that I'm given next week in MENA is, I guess it's in part a linguistics presentation, but I want to tell people I'm not a linguist at all. I've never had a single class in linguistics or anything like that. But I am a historian, and my specialty is really the history of the Ozarks. I'm trained as a Southern historian, and I got my PhD at Auburn. And you don't take a lot of classes on the Ozarks or Arkansas or Missouri when you're going to school at Auburn.
I bet not this year. Nope. They definitely don't like to talk about it.
Right. So this is What happened besides growing up in rural Arkansas and just hearing this talk as I was growing up, it was probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I was contacted by a junior high teacher in Branson, Missouri. And everybody knows Branson, yeah. Missouri. And she said, we're reading this book. She was an English teacher. She said, we're all the students in junior high reading this book. I don't even remember exactly what it was, but the issue of dialect has come up, and we would like someone to come and talk to us about the Ozark dialect, just kind of, or, you know, in this case, the Hill Country dialect, because the Washitas and the Ozarks, you know, the dialect's going to be really, really similar. Mm-hmm. And so, so I did that just sort of on the spur of the moment, and put together a little presentation 5 or 6 years ago and did that, and just got more and more interested in this as time went on, and built this into a, you know, a little more polished presentation. But a lot of it has to do with history. I'm a historian, and a lot of language you can tie into history very easily, because, you know, we inherit this stuff. And so a lot of the presentation has to do with why we talk the way we do, where our ancestors came from, and that sort of the language traditions that they brought with them, and a lot of that kind of stuff. So it's just as much about history as it is about dialect.
Well, that sounds like something I absolutely don't want to miss, because
absolutely.
I love those types of things. But I read very quickly, skimmed through the list of some of your books, and noticed, I believe there was one, let me pull my phone out, but about the Ozark Hillbilly, maybe how that shaped that part of Arkansas. But here's my question to you. We hear that and have heard that since we were children, that Ozark Hillbilly stereotype. We've never heard much about any kind of Ouachita stereotype. Why do you think—
Are we the classier hillbillies?
Yeah, are we the classier hillbillies, or what's the deal here? Or is the Ozarks just so much more well-known, being in that close proximity to Branson and Northwest Arkansas with, you know, the bigger towns, Walmart, et cetera. You know, we feel the Ouachitas can be very overlooked, but I am glad we didn't really get that stereotype. But could you tell us a little more about that Ozark Hillbilly stereotype?
Well, I can ease your mind in part by saying that the old Arkansas stereotype, which is very much a hillbilly stereotype, did include the Ouachitas, and there are plenty of examples of Ouachitas. As a matter of fact, really one of the earliest books that I've seen quite a bit of use of the term hillbilly in was a book, I think it was called Down in Arkansas. And this is way over 100 years ago. And it was actually, for the most part, set in the Ouachitas. And there's, you know, there's a lot of hillbilly usage in there. But I think you're right, Ashley, the point you made about the Ozarks being better known. And part of that may just be because people who read the word Ouachita have no clue how to pronounce it.
Oh, Ouachita.
Well, that and the buffalo. The buffalo plays a big part of that too.
Big part of it.
Yeah, and the Ozarks, it's a bigger region. Mm-hmm. There are more people in the Ozarks. There are, you know, people have heard of Branson. Mm-hmm. They've heard of Bass Pro Shops and all this kind of stuff, Walmart, that the Ozarks is home
Tyson,
to.
Tyson, we all
so
know
I,
that.
So I think a lot of that is just, and the word Ozark itself is kind of a funny word. You know, mm-hmm. any word starts with an O and's got a Z in there. It's just kind of a funny looking word, and has almost like a comic connotation with it. So I think that's probably why the hillbilly image has been more affiliated with the Ozarks. But one of the things that a lot of people today in the 21st century don't realize is up until probably the 1930s, when people talked about the Ozarks, they included the Ouachitas in that.
No, they didn't separate the two ranges.
Yeah, they didn't separate. It's just, you know, it's the hill country. And still today, if you take a geography class, you'll talk about the interior highlands of America. Mm-hmm. And the interior highlands consist of both the Ozarks and the Washitas. The Washitas are real mountains. Mm-hmm. The Ozarks aren't.
No, exactly. And, that's what we try to tell people.
We had a historian
Thank you. Anyways, we, you know, we do still want to differentiate ourselves and say we're special because of our topography, for the way we lay, you know, that east to west, west to east running mountain range. That's very different. It's huge in this part of the country. There's nothing else like it. So we like to say we're really special just because of that reason. But now to know we've been included in the hill country,
we've been stereotyped.
We're at the base of the second tallest mountain in Arkansas and we're in hill country.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's all perspective. You know, you ask people from the Rockies, then we're, you know, we're doing good if they even consider us hills, I guess.
Right. That's true.
But yeah, for people in the Delta, then,
oh yeah,
you know, anything, any mound out there seems like a mountain.
That's but, a mountain.
But you are right. The Washitas are very unique in that way. And that's what happened is in the early 20th century, geographers started to differentiate between the Washitas and the Ozarks, because they said they're formed in different ways. They have different geologic histories.
Different composition, right?
Yeah, they're distinct, different regions separated by the Arkansas River. And so they started separating them. For our purposes as historians, and if you're looking at dialect and stuff like that, the separation isn't as distinct because the ancestors of people who now live in the Washitas and people who live in the Ozarks mostly came from the same places back in Tennessee. And
they all came over from the East Coast. Yeah.
Yeah, they came from basically the greater Appalachian region back east. And the dialect, because of that, is going to be very similar. The life ways are similar. What we eat is, you know, basically indistinguishable from each other in the religious traditions and all that kind of stuff. So all that it's very hard to differentiate from the Ozarks to the Washitas. But for, you know, just basic geography and basic geology, they are very different regions.
Keep your inhalers at the ready. The Washita Chronicles will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
So Ashley, we have this thing in the South called floating. Canoes, kayaks, rafts, tubes. Great way to spend the day.
Girl, I know about floating. We're Southerners. To us, summer is for floating. And the best floating river in Arkansas is the Buffalo National River. And the best place to start your Buffalo River adventure is Buffalo River Outfitters. And they are an authorized concessionaire on the Buffalo National River. They're located in St. Joe, Arkansas. Floating, camping, fishing, or hiking, all of your needs are taken care of at BRO. They provide canoes, kayaks, rafts, and shuttle service, along with clean and cozy lodging options that are unmatched in the area.
So if floating is your thing, one-day trips or multiple-day trips, you might want to go look at BRO. Visit the Buffalo River Outfitter store to stock up on everything that you need for your Ozark adventure vacation.
What do they have there?
There are swimming shorts, there's tanks and t-shirts. They've got plenty of sunscreen if you forget yours.
Because I'm going to forget my sunscreen.
Or your sunglasses. I always leave without my sunglasses. They've got hats, snacks. You know, we have to have our snacks on the water, ice, and so much more.
Well, and ice is going to be the most important thing for us to fill up that cooler.
Yeah, got to have our cooler.
BRO's knowledgeable staff can accommodate any questions about the Buffalo National River. And you can also order books and maps online to prepare for your trip. So, are you ready to plan your Buffalo River adventure? Visit BuffaloRiverOutfitters.com to find more information or to book conveniently online. You can call them at 870-439-2200 and make sure you follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And go check out our episode with the owner of Buffalo River Outfitters, Ben Milburn.
I don't know if you're a TikToker, but there was a TikTok that had gone around and it was explaining how the Southern dialect came about from when our ancestors came over from Europe and had the thick English accent, and it's just slowed down to what we have today. Is that true?
I don't know. I've never heard that particular, you know, and I'm not a TikToker and I don't know much about TikTok. I still think clock when somebody says TikTok, but, But what I do, what little I do know about TikTok, I tend, you know, I wouldn't put a lot of stock.
Oh, in, no, absolutely. Grain of salt. I know. That's why I've come to ask so, the horse, you know, come right yeah, straight to the horse yeah, that's, on that one.
Language and dialect, they're pretty complex things that we're still figuring out about. We do know that our dialect, in this case, we're talking about sort of a hill country dialect that's mm-hmm. going to be similar, the Ozarks and Ouachita is similar to what you find in Appalachia, mm-hmm. an upcountry kind of dialect, that it's mostly derived from English speakers. Almost all of it is. But what we know is that a lot of the grammar is going to come from people who came here from places like Scotland and Northern Ireland, the Scots-Irish, as mm-hmm. they were called. A lot of the kind of grammar tics that we have, basically what our English teachers would say are the bad grammar that we inherit from our ancestors, kind of comes guilty. From that. You know, I know that.
Mm-hmm. I seen it.
I seen
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he blowed up his house. That kind of thing. And then you've got, and then there are a lot of other things that we get from, you know, the English or the English settlers who came over. There are other, you know, pronunciations and things like that. So it's kind of a mixed bag. And what we get is different people from different part of the British Isles settle in different parts of the Atlantic coast. And they, back in those days and still today in England, you know, there are identifiable dialects from one place to another in England as there were back then. And so mm-hmm. they brought over their own dialects. And so the people who settled in New England, say, were often from, you know, very different parts of England or the British Isles than the people who settled in Virginia or who settled in Pennsylvania. And those dialects metamorphose over time in America, but they started in very different places. So they end up in very different places, despite all the homogenizing things that we have in American society today that pushes us more toward a common dialect. But part of what happens too is in places like Appalachia and the Ouachitas and the Ozarks that are relatively isolated when compared to other parts of the United States, those old dialect tics often hang on longer and they survive into the late 20th century and the early 21st century, where they might die out in other parts mm-hmm. of the country that are more exposed to different dialects and that are mm-hmm. that are more sort of in the middle of things and
where there's more immigration, right, ethnicity, yeah, et cetera.
So now we're right, just all stuck down in the yeah. South fixing to do something. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. We're gonna go yeah, work so, some clothes.
Washington. Right. And that's why you know, rural has your strongest dialects, your thickest accents, all that kind of stuff are more likely to survive in rural areas mm-hmm. where people have less contact with the world. Of course, we know today, 21st century, with everyone with cell phones and we've all got the internet and all that kind of stuff, that's breaking down quickly. But certainly into the late 20th century, the rural areas is where you really see the survival of that, just because you hear the same people every day talking the same mm-hmm. language, and that's what you grow up talking, and you're not exposed to a lot of other stuff.
Well, it seems like, if I remember from what I've read, Arkansas history, that, I mean, it was going to be a certain type of person back when Arkansas was being settled to even want to come out here and try to brave this land, because it was not easy. Especially in the hill country here. So, I mean, is it true that most of the earliest settlers, I'm not talking like way back when discovery, I'm talking about just when we were populating the state here, that they were, you know, possibly outlaws,
the Rough Riders,
and the Rough Riders. And, you know, what type of people is it the type of people that were attracted to Arkansas that has greatly influenced our dialect here?
Yes, but I would say that notion that the Ozarks and the Ouachitas and places like that attracted sort of people who wanted to stay away from mainstream society is, I think that's a false notion. It's a romantic one, and that's why it gets
passed around,
gets passed down through the generations. But for the most part, the people who came here came for the same reasons that settlers settled anywhere. Mm-hmm. It was just to make a better life. It was to find cheap land.
Or
because things were overcrowded. As hard as it is to believe that Tennessee or Kentucky or Virginia would have been overcrowded in the 1850s or 1880s or something like that, in terms of agriculture, when everybody's trying to make a living on the farm, it was overcrowded. It was hard to get land. And so a place like Arkansas offers a fresh start. It offers cheap land and
rich land too. There's a lot of
lot of it really is. Even in the hill country, if you can get a river bottom farm or a nice creek bottom farm, there's some good land there. Now the thing is, that's for the early settlers, and then the later settlers have to settle on the ridges and in all the rocky ground and
where you can't even get your shovel in the ground,
where the rocks reproduce overnight.
Yes,
right. Yeah, and that's something we have in common too. That we know what it's like to live in rocky, infertile places where it's really hard to make a living. But those settlers, I think we can rest assured that most of our ancestors were law-abiding citizens, and they weren't hiding from the law. Although there were some of those people most folks are they're just folks, and they're trying to make a better life somewhere. It's the same reason why people leave their home today and move somewhere else. Usually it's to move to a different city or a bigger place or something like that, because there are more job opportunities, or you can make more money by switching to a different company or something like that. Same sorts of stuff.
Well, I'm glad to see that, or it seems to me that in recent years, Arkansas, our reputation has improved.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have, quite that stereotype that we had when I was growing up as a kid in the 80s and early 90s. I think that Alabama has taken that honor now.
West Virginia. Yeah, give it to West Virginia.
Florida. We're just going to give it to Florida. people are seeing the brilliance that has come out of Arkansas and continues to pour out of Arkansas. There's still people in this country that don't know that Walmart was founded in Arkansas. They don't know that companies like Dillard's,
Tyson,
Ranger Boats, Tyson, J.B. Hunt. I mean, we could go on and on and on with the huge Arkansas companies.
Or missile plants.
Well,
come on now.
Nuclear One. Anyways. But just the raw talent that has come out of Arkansas in the way that in the recent years we've been presented to the country and to the world, I believe it's a major improvement over what a lot of your books are about, that stereotype, that hillbilly. I mean, it's fun to reminisce on that, to learn about it, and to even, poke fun at it a little bit, but it's just not really that true anymore.
It's funny when the hillbillies start making fun of the hipsters that are in Bentonville now.
Yeah,
it's
we do.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've turned the tables on them all. I think you're exactly right. And I think, and I've noticed this, especially in the last 10 or 12 years, for the most part, the hillbilly has disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part of me that's sort of wistful and wishes that, the hillbilly icon, the hillbilly imagery is still out there. Part of it's because I've built my career over sort of refuting this idea of
you don't want your branding to die, do you?
Right. I gotta switch gears now and do something completely different. I think a major moment, kind of a major cultural image moment in Arkansas's history was in 2011 when Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art opened in Bentonville. And I mean, to me, that was kind of a sea change moment. And of course, that's Walmart money. That's Alice Walton and Walmart Foundation, Walton Family Foundation money that did that. And it just in the 21st century alone, you've seen the northwest corner of Arkansas just completely transformed demographically.
It's exploded.
Yeah, it's just become a giant suburb up there. And I'm not, you know, a particular fan as a country boy. I still prefer the rural Arkansas places, but it has just changed. And I think the nation took notice of that when they first announced that that museum was going to be built. The first reaction for journalists in places like New York and Los Angeles was to make fun of Alice Walton, to make fun of Arkansas, and to attack Alice Walton for buying, you know, for spending millions of dollars on all these iconic pieces of art and taking them away from places like New York and Philadelphia and bringing them to Bentonville, Arkansas. But once the museum opened, what I noticed is that the brand of Arkansas and even the brand of the Ozarks started to change. You started to have magazines that were now writing stories about how modern and affluent and kind of hip Northwest Arkansas was, instead of writing stories about
hillbillies,
overalls,
how backwards
corn cob pipes,
and I think it was in 2017 or somewhere around in there where, you know, I found it was Vogue, Vogue magazine. I'm pretty sure Vogue magazine never even realized there was a place called Arkansas or the Ozarks before before this, but Vogue magazine came out with an article on why you should visit the Arkansas Ozarks. And I thought there are just generations of country people in Arkansas who are turning over in their graves that Vogue magazine has suddenly and to me it just kind of represented this, you know, this disappearance of the hillbilly character in this new branded image for at least for Northwest Arkansas. Now, you know, there are plenty of places around Arkansas that haven't changed.
Ponca's like, gonna still always be Ponca. Sure.
Well, and I mean, when you hear towns like Toad Suck,
Bullfrog Valley, stop
making fun of my Bullfrog Valley now.
Keep your inhalers at the ready. The Washtenaw Chronicles will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Guess what, Ashley?
What?
It's tax time.
Ooh, I love tax time.
You know, it's always that time we kind of gather around our favorite stores and give them all of our hard-earned money throughout the years.
I have a hard time parting with my hard-earned money, but I also like to shop.
I do too, and it's spring cleaning. I've rearranged my furniture, and I just don't like it anymore.
Well, you know what you need to do.
Tell me.
You need to go to Dawn's Easy Pay.
That's that business that's been around for like 40 years.
40 years.
Veteran owned.
Family owned and operated.
Family owned and operated.
Third generation.
And they've got everything I need.
They do. So let me tell you, they have all the brands that you could possibly want. They've got Ashley, GE, Whirlpool, Catnapper, Samsung, and more. And if you go in there and you don't see something on the floor that you like, you can check out their catalogs and special order anything.
Okay, but I drive an SUV. I don't have a truck. How am I going to get it to my house?
Well, they have free delivery and setup.
Free delivery and setup?
Free delivery and
setup.
Nothing's
free anymore, Ashley.
Well, I mean, I would normally say that that is true, but this is Dawn's. They take care of their customers. That's what they're there for.
So when I walk in and I see that couch I want and that tag's hanging there, it's everything I need to know right then and there.
Yeah. The tax is included on that. The price on the piece is the price that you pay.
Is there only one location that I can shop at?
No, there's multiple locations. If you're in Arkansas, you can go to the Mena, Waldron, DeQueen, or Boonville location. If you're in Oklahoma, you can hit up the Broken Bow, Idabel, or Poto locations. And the Boonville location, that is a whole new format. That is the Dawn's home store.
I heard I can get towels there.
You can get all kinds of stuff there. And you know what, Jody? When you go in there to look for that new living room set, you might see a whole lot of other things that you're interested in, because not only do they have furniture, they've got appliances, they've got home decor and bedding, they've got air conditioners, gaming consoles, and some small appliances and kitchen and garden things. Huge selection, huge inventory. It's like if you need it for your home, you can find it at Dawn's.
We live so remotely. What happens if my appliances break?
They service all of their appliances.
That is amazing.
It is amazing. I mean, they're affordable. They've got several financing and payment options. So whatever your budget or whatever your situation, Dawn's will work with you to find something that fits your life.
before the Waltons, let's take it back to 540. 540 took us off the pig trail. That was a big thing through Arkansas, was riding that pig trail up and being in the mountains. And now 540 takes you completely away from it.
Well, right. You still drive through them. It's just you're passing through the cuts.
Yeah,
you just don't know because you're on an interstate. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can drive an interstate anywhere and you don't really know.
Right.
You know, you don't really know where you are.
Take you don't get a scope of the landscape.
Take that exit at Chester and just ride on.
Well, I do want to make a real quick comment. I'm sure you probably already know this, but in case you don't, you mentioned that Vogue probably had never even heard of Arkansas, but do you know about Dorothy Shaver, right?
Yeah, from Mena, right?
And she was the first female CEO of a Fortune 500 company, Lord and Taylor.
That's right. Yeah, thanks for reminding me. I do remember her. She was a descendant of Fighting Bob Shaver, I think, the Civil War.
Yes, term. So her father built this amazing house that's still here. When you come to town, you need to go and check it out. My friends, Ashley and Scott Vaca, own it. It's called the Carriage House Inn now. But her father was Dr. Shaver. I cannot remember his first name.
That was the hospital, right?
That was a hospital originally, okay. Yes. It's a beautiful, beautiful house. But yeah, she was one of his daughters, raised right here on Port Arthur in Mena, Arkansas, and went on to New York to become CEO of Lord & Taylor. So very, very cool.
So what you're telling me is that Vogue really had heard of Arkansas.
They really had.
That's a really good tie-in. And it's proof again that even when Arkansas was sort of, you know, tied down by this hillbilly image, there were plenty of people who proved that, you know, that Arkansas wasn't as hillbilly a state as everyone else seemed to believe.
So Dog Patch, you've got a book about Dog Patch, correct? Did I see that on the list?
I talk about Dog Patch in it, but it's not, I don't have a book about just it. About Dog Patch, right?
Okay. What, I mean, to me, that had to be, I don't even, when did Dog Patch open?
In 68.
Yeah, the 68.
So,
and it closed in what year?
In the early 90s.
Yeah, I remember.
93, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. I had ran from the Dog Patch dog at one point in my life. I hated that guy. You remember the mascot?
The marketing, you know, for Dog Patch was obviously very, very stereotyping our area. And I think that probably did a whole lot to perpetrate, you know, that image of us in the Ozarks and the hillbillies, et cetera, et cetera.
Schools like Ozark, that's their mascot.
Right,
they are
right.
The hillbillies.
Mm-hmm. But Dog Patch itself, so you say you visited or talked about it in one of your books. What are some of the things that you covered on that? It's very interesting to me, especially with what their plans are to do with it now, you know, now that it's been bought and everything, but the history of it would be kind of cool to touch on.
Yeah, Dog Patch is a fascinating story. And you know, we're talking about Dog Patch USA, the theme park that was about 10 miles south of Harrison in Newton County.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, you know, your older listeners, and I don't know how
many podcast
listeners are.
We have a wide variety of listeners.
Well, good. Mm-hmm. You're older. Really, anybody over 55 is going to remember the Little Abner comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Dog Patch USA was based on. And that comic strip had been around since the 1930s. And it was drawn by a guy from Massachusetts who had probably never even been to Arkansas, you know, before he came down for the grand opening of Dog Patch USA. So there was a lot of stereotyping that went into that comic strip, and the theme park was based on the comic strip. So it transferred that stereotyping over. But what I found was that, you know, the local people around there that I've talked to, and especially the ones who as teenagers or as college students got jobs at the theme park, they just love Dog Patch. You know, it's a very important part of kind of a nostalgic look back at their young adulthood or their childhood or something like that. And I don't think the hillbilly stereotyping bothered them all that much, but obviously it was there. I mean, it was just all over the place, you know, barefooted locals and moonshiners. Mm-hmm.
Barefooted and pregnant, right?
And it was just very much you know, came out of that, that tradition of stereotyping mountain people in the South. But it was, what happens with Dogpatch is less than 10 years into the run of the theme park, the guy who drew the comic strip retired, and there's no more Little Abner in the newspapers. And after a few years, once today, when a TV show goes off the air, for the most part, after a few years, we just kind of forget about it. We move on to the thing, and people eventually forget about Little Abner. And like I say, if you're under 55, certainly under 50, you're probably not going to remember anything about the comic strip. And if you're not going to remember much about the theme park either, because it's been closed now for nearly 30 years. Mm-hmm. But it was a classic example of using the hillbilly stereotype to promote Arkansas tourism, which has been done in lots of other places. Mm-hmm. And really what I found was when this first started in the late 60s, the only people who were complaining about it were some of the folks in Little Rock. And they're not worried so much about what that image and what that use of the stereotype, is going to do to local people in North Arkansas. They're more worried about what it's going to do for Arkansas businesses, or what mm-hmm. it's going to do to Arkansas businesses, mm-hmm. people in Little Rock.
Right.
And there's always been that divide within the state of Arkansas, and anywhere where you have stereotypes, there's always your sort of middle class and upper class.
Your city slickers.
Mm-hmm. who they indulge in the stereotype as well, and they make fun of the rural mm-hmm. country bumpkins as well, but it gets on their nerves when somebody from New York or LA or Chicago includes them, mm-hmm. bumps mm-hmm. them in with the rest of us.
Right.
That's where you get a problem. That's why the Little Rock folks were not very comfortable, with the way that park was promoted at first. If it had made a whole lot of money,
mm-hmm. they would have been fine.
Oh, they would have been proud.
Yeah, that would have been great. Mm-hmm. But it never did, and it just turns into kind of almost a farcical thing when they set up a ski resort next door to Dogpatch, I don't have to tell you, Arkansas is not an ideal place
for skiing,
for a winter ski resort.
No,
and it wasn't then, and it wouldn't be now.
I would think more bobsledding down the ice.
I would think more water skiing.
Well, it's funny we talk about the stereotypes. Back in, I guess it was 2005, I had left Arkansas and moved to Columbus, Ohio. And I was waiting tables. And this kid asked me, he was like, "You talk funny. Where are you from?" And I said, "I'm from Arkansas." And he looked at me really funny and he goes, "But you wear shoes."
Right.
And I'm like, we wear shoes. Like, it literally, people in other places, like, they believe that stereotype about us. So we walk around barefooted, married to our cousins.
Well, I've been a lot of...
my third cousin, thank you.
No, I've been a lot of places, and there's been a number of times when I've been talking to someone, and they've literally looked at me and gone, "Well, where are you from?" And I told them, and they, "You have the most Southern accent I have ever heard." I'm like, no, I don't. Believe me, we can go further south. You can get worse than this.
Yeah, let's take you into Louisiana. It gets weird down there.
But when I'm out in California and I ask somebody for a lighter and they're going, "Water?" And I'm like, "Lighter." And they say, "No, water." And lighter. They couldn't. Yeah. Can't understand me. Foreign language.
One of the things that even academic studies have shown that people around the nation tend to associate a Southern accent with low IQ, mm-hmm. and more than any other regional accent that we have. I mean, that's still common even in the 21st century. And even people in the South are probably more likely to associate a really thick Southern accent with low IQ. So we face that, and I think going back to your 2005 Columbus, Ohio example, I think a lot of people who aren't from the South still have that sort of condescending attitude where they feel like they can bring that up. Mm-hmm. They feel like they can, you know, whether it's offensive or not, they feel they can do that. My mom was spent most of her career as a kindergarten teacher. And I remember she came home one time. This was probably in the 80s, probably sometime in the 1980s. And we lived in an area, our school district covered an area that included a retirement community. And most of the people who moved to the retirement community were from the upper Midwest, Illinois, Iowa, places like that. And sometimes there would, you know, their kids and their grandkids would follow them down. And she had this student in her class. And the word, they were doing like a word of the day or reading this, I think they were reading a story. And the word acorn was in the story. And of course, most people in Arkansas say acorn, or mm-hmm. certainly we did back in the 1980s. It's acorn, it's not acorn.
It's still acorn.
It's still acorn. And there are even places called Acorn, aren't there?
No, I mean, that's acorn. One right outside of Mena. It's here. One of our communities is acorn.
Right.
Yeah.
And still got the school and,
Acorn everything. Schools.
This kid, she was reading the story, and she said, and she when she got to the word, she said acorn, and this little boy raises his hand and says, it's not acorn, it's acorn. It corrected his teacher. This kindergarten kid. And I don't, it's not something you couldn't imagine a kid from Arkansas, you know, moving to Illinois or Indiana or somewhere like that
and correcting
their teacher on their mispronunciation of a word. But it's still, it's part of that. There's just this kind of assumption that people around the nation who aren't from the South feel that they can correct us, or that we're speaking wrong.
Well, in the South,
we use pronunciation.
We were taught manners. That's big difference.
Some of our generations have, not all,
but
of
most
them.
Of them.
The newer generation.
I mean, you saying that a kid from the South who would be moved north wouldn't? I mean, honestly, we wouldn't. We've not taught our children to behave that way. But that condescending attitude, I mean, everybody can have an attitude, but I do not feel like Southerners, I don't think we've got that chip on our shoulder like that. I don't feel like we do so much. And, you know, a lot of times when we do hear people from the North making fun of us, poking fun, mimicking whatever, and it's kind of funny to me at this point because, you know, we know who we are.
Yeah, but we still call them Yankees.
We still call them Yankees.
We really still bring out the carpetbaggers.
Or idiots who can't drive.
Those are Texans. Those are Texans.
Just saying. I've seen a few from
we love you, Texas.
Illinois that couldn't either. So anyways.
Keep your inhalers at the ready. The Washtenaw Chronicles will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Well, Jody, it's that time of year again.
Nader season.
If you are not local to our area or really anywhere in that Midwest and the southern part of the country, naders might not even be on your radar.
No, but naders stay on my radar, especially anywhere from March to May.
For sure. But what happens if a nader or some serious straight line winds or that hail
or your neighbor's trampoline
or your neighbor's trampoline or the hail that comes with those storms wreaks havoc on your windshield? What are you going to do?
I'm going to call Richie's Discount Auto Glass.
Oh, yeah, because Richie is the place to go for fast same day service on most windshields. And he has a large stock of windshields available, like just there. He keeps inventory.
He does. He's conveniently located at 3008 Highway 71 South in Mena, where the 4-lane ends.
Or you can give him a call at 479-394-9938. Richie's Discount Auto Glass is the place to get your windshield replaced in Mena. And I've said this before, I've gotten multiple quotes when something has happened to a windshield on one of my cars, or, you know, maybe my teenager was responsible for damaging a windshield, and Richie is always half the price of the other guys.
Richie's Discount Auto Glass has 40 years of experience, so stop by and say hi to Richie and see the classic cars.
I wouldn't trust my vehicle with anyone other than Richie.
Same.
I'm going to backtrack just a little bit because we were talking about Dog Patch and the Lil Abner comic. We're going to tie in Mena again here and, you know, Lemon Abner. Okay. Mm-hmm. So based in Mena,
Pine Ridge,
right? Pine Ridge, which originally that town was Waters, and that show became so popular. I mean, they used it as fictional, you know, mm-hmm. so they called that town Pine Ridge on their radio show.
And eventually the town changed their name to that. But that radio show was, it was hugely syndicated. It had sponsors like Ford Motor Company and Quaker Oats. There were like seven movies made by Lum and Abner. And, you know, that was, I'm pretty sure in the same time period that Lil Abner Comet came out. So I'm thinking that, you know, Lum and Abner being syndicated across the U.S. on radio stations, when that's what people were doing, was sitting around listening to radio shows, I'm sure did not help with the stereotype of the backwards Arkansan.
Yeah, you're probably right. Though I would say for Lum and Abner, and I have listened, I've been able to listen to a number of the shows. You know, there's some websites that have that specialize in old time radio. Mm-hmm. And the comedy on Lum and Abner was... It was kind of a gentle, slow sort of comedy. Mm-hmm. And they weren't on Lum and Abner, you know, their purpose, of course, these are two guys from the Washutas.
From Mena, yeah.
And their purpose is not to make fun of their neighbors and their home folks. Now I'm sure a lot of people who weren't from Arkansas would hear this and mm-hmm. hear these accents that they were using and all that kind of stuff and just naturally make fun of them.
Right.
But Lum and Abner itself was a really, really popular show mm-hmm. around the country, and not just in the South, but around the United States. And I think a lot of that is just because it was a show that, you know, it wasn't based on a mean
no
sort of
humor, no
and it was nostalgic, and it was meant to get across the idea that life is better in a small town. Mm-hmm. It may be simpler and the people may be simpler, but life is better and people are nicer and things are easier. And so and part of that too is Lum and Abner is created in the 1930s, and it exists all the way into the 1950s. I mean, it's a really, really long
time. We still have a festival that we honor them every year.
Yeah, Lum and Abner Festival will be. Mm-hmm.
And here Ashley and I are at 20 in the year 2022. We're still sitting around making fun of our neighbors. So we're trying to keep that legacy.
Yeah, we try
alive.
To keep Lum and Abner going for sure.
You're doing it. Yeah.
Sure.
You're doing a good job. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, the 21st century Lum and Abner. All you need is a Cracker Barrel and a, you know, an old wooden cash register or something.
Hi, grannies.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, even though it was not a mean-spirited show, like you said, it truly was not. But those accents and those colloquialisms were still spread across the U.S. I mean, yeah. I know. I had a hard time spitting that out. I've got dry mouth. I'm out of coffee. I need water. I almost stumbled over that one. But truly, I mean, they were able to hear the type of the dialect and the slang that we were using in this area across the country at a time when, you know, someone way off in the northwest corner or the northeast corner probably had absolutely no reason and not much means to travel to mm-hmm. Arkansas, you know. So it's just really, really cool. I think people have known about us for a very long time, whether they knew it or not.
Well, we get influenced every generation. There's a new.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
every generation.
Yeah, I think Lum and Abner is a really good example of that. And I remember, you know, the way they pronounced Tulsa, it was Tulsi on the show. Mm-hmm. And you're right. A lot of those, you know, characteristics of the Southern Highland dialect were right there in their program. And but that was also at a time, especially in the 1930s, when I think a lot of Americans were fascinated with regional differences, when our regional differences were a lot starker than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with a radio was just beginning, and we were just beginning to hear people from other parts of the country that we hadn't been able to hear before. And I think the 30s was especially a time when people really got into that. And I think a lot of people probably adopted some of that, you know, some of that regional dialect just for fun, maybe in their own everyday speech. And there were probably phrases that Lum and Abner used that made their way into conversation and into the language in the country in ways that we may not even realize today.
Very, very interesting stuff. Well, do you have anything else, Jody, before we wrap up?
Let's talk about what time.
Well, obviously that's part of the wrap up.
No, I think that we've got
I think I've got all my questions answered.
Okay. So we need that date. That is what, the 13th?
The 12th.
12th.
The 12th. I think it's 1 p.m.
April 13th. April 12th. Why did I do that? April 12th. 1 p.m.
Yeah. Yep. It's actually, I think it's, let me make sure here. I think it's at 1:30.
No, is it 1:30? I'm just going to be there early for my meet and greet, apparently.
Yeah. Which is an odd time to start something, but let me make sure I've got my... I've got it down as 1:30, and hopefully I won't be 30 minutes late.
Nah, we'll wait on you. We know everything works slower around here.
We'll see you about 1:15 then. How about that?
Yeah, I'll be there before 1:30, but apparently that's when this thing's going to kick off.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are truly, truly looking forward to it. Does the lecture actually, or the presentation, have a title? I'm trying to remember that press release. I should have it in front of me, but we know
see so many press releases.
Yeah, I am right now.
Yeah, it's called How to Talk Hillbilly in 7 Simple Steps.
Would you like me to just stand there and you just point to me?
Just hang out in the Walmart for a little while.
I'll be your PowerPoint. Learn.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The Walmarts, as I've heard a lot of people. The Walmarts is not a bad place to pick that up. But
medicine.
But yeah,
you go get your medicine at the Walmarts.
Right. And you'll learn how to speak a new language, at least a new dialect, in basically less than an hour's time. I'll have to say there are really more than 7 steps, but we're just going to cover the 7 essential steps.
Well, Brooks, we truly appreciate your time. We look forward to meeting you in person next week. My co-host here does as well, even though she's slightly distracted.
I'm setting up more times. I'm working. He made me.
Uh-huh. I saw that. Is that it? You got anything else?
No, we're good.
All right. Again, Brooks, thank you so very much. And we'll see you next week. Okay.
Well, thanks, Ashley and Jody, for having me on. And I look forward to being in MENA next Tuesday.
We'll see you then.
All right.
It's time for that portion of the show we like to call Wrap Up Ramblings with
Producer Trey.
Producer Papa.
The Mammal Chaser.
Yep, missed that joke. But I don't think that I'm missing a whole lot.
You're not missing anything.
No, it's great.
You'd have to follow us on social media, Ashley, and you obviously don't do that.
Nope. Got a few other things to do with my time. Anyways, though. Today's guest, that was fun.
Yeah, it was.
That was fun. I'm really, really, really looking forward to a show.
Is that our first PhD we've had on the show, right?
I don't think so.
We'd have to go back
and I'd want to fact check that. I think we've had more than just a couple. But, you know, I know that he didn't really want to, like, obviously he wasn't going to do his presentation or show or lecture or whatever it is. But we were chatting with him before we hit record, and we were talking about, because he's from Missouri, right?
Isn't that where Ewan's from?
Ewan's
from?
Ewan's, y'all, Missouri.
Well, I'm fixing to get up there and see Ewan's.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I found, I don't want to say, very true, because this is what I experienced, and I made this joke when we brought that up before we hit record, was that, you know, I was also from Missouri. But if my grandma was alive and heard me say Missouri, she'd make a face at me, you know, because it was Missouri. And that whole generation, everyone I knew up there, because they were all much older than me since I moved away so young and I would just go to visit my family, always said Missouri. Now, the part of the state she lived in, they said y'all. But the part of the state my sister lived in, which is much closer to where Mr. Blevins is from, is Ewan's.
That's such a weird word.
Yeah. The first time they were like, Yen's want to go to the store? I'm like, huh?
It's like the South and the East Coast mix because they're you all.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys?
That
you
just,
all.
That just feels.
You all. Yes.
I don't know what
and
they
then we
are.
Say
it feels
y'all.
Like an assault on my ears.
And so it's like they made it to Missouri and they're like, we're just going to half it. Yen's.
Part of y'all can use y'all. Part of it can Yen's. Yen's.
Yen's.
It's so weird. So it's strange.
The Missouri is even weirder.
Very much so. But words in themselves and linguistics.
That's like he said in that.
Very,
you know,
weird and interesting.
Being rural and you don't have a lot of cultures. Mm-hmm. You don't. And you notice that about people. If, for instance, when I moved here in 98, if you didn't know who I was and you just listened to me on the radio, would you have thought I was white? Absolutely not, because I had a strong, thick Mississippi Delta drawl.
Yes, you did.
Oh, the
and I got made fun of so bad for it, because you heel folk, you heelbillies up ewins and yum.
You I don't know, that, say
that
ewins. Actually,
that reminds me of something that was mentioned in the show. I think it was you were telling a story about how people were surprised that Arkansans wear shoes.
Yeah.
And we're not barefoot. See, I heard the same thing when my family lived in Colorado. I got like heavily bullied because
you wore shoes.
Yeah, of course I wore shoes. It was it was Silverthorne, Colorado. It was freezing cold. I wore snow boots, you know. And I also used to have a real thick Southern accent up until I was like 10 years old, because you know, grew up in the Ouachitas. But when I moved there, I got bullied so hard that I started training my voice to, you know, stop talking like that.
And one day, once Colorado.
Once you lose your Southern accent, it never comes back.
I think you are a little more Southern sounding than you think you are.
That's a comforting thought, because I somewhat feel like disconnected, because I feel like I sound different than a lot of people. Maybe it did come back.
I'm just real thankful mine left, and I just sound like a real Ivy Leaguer over here.
Yours is slower, Trey. It's not so much that you've got the drawl,
yeah,
but you do speak slower like we do. You know, you kind of...
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
You don't talk real fast or... I think he's Southern enough.
Just like...
I think we'll claim
you. We'll let you in.
Southern classical gentleman. I'll take it.
What was that? Somewhere Between Jethro and Jesus?
So, yeah, that's the new song Nash is writing. We came up with the song the other day. We were talking about religion. He asked me where my views were, and I said I'm somewhere between Jesus and Jesco, or Jesco and
Jesco.
Jesus.
Yeah, Jesco, not Jethro. Jesco. I always...
Jesco.
I really only watched that once all the way through. I need to sit down
and
watch it
again. If
you
don't know who Jesco is, I need you to go ahead and watch The Wild and Wonderful Whites, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Jesco White is the dancing outlaw.
I know what you're talking
about.
He's
a tap dancer, mountain tap dancer from... that West area. Virginia. And what's crazy, let's talk about that. You know, we love music, and we love bluegrass music. That's big thing in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, turkey tracks.
You hear, even in the Ozarks and the Ouachitas, that music still sounds like the Appalachians, you know, that it still sounds, because whether we like it or not, most of us were Tennessee, South Carolina, those ports that we came in from, Ireland, Scotland, England, and our generation started there in the Appalachian Mountains, and kind of moved over into Arkansas and the Ozarks and the Ouachita. So our dialect's still there, and our music's still there, and it lives through. And what a cool day to sit down with a historian and hear, you know, how all that.
Yeah, I'm glad that we got a professional opinion on the Better Mountains.
Well, he didn't necessarily say ours were better. He just said ours are actually mountains.
And that's a fact. I mean, now
they don't count.
Anybody wants to argue, I'm just going to reference them to episode, what is this?
66
of the Washington Probably. Chronicles.
Well, Trey came in my office a little while ago and asked me about this.
Mm-hmm.
What did I say?
Oh, yeah. So I walked in and I was like, he said that, you know, the Ozarks aren't mountains at all. And Ashley was like, no, they're not. They're actually a plateau. There's and I was plateaus. Like, what? And she pulled out this like topographical map of Arkansas. And it is a plateau. I was like, really? And I have this like J.R.R. Tolkien-esque Arkansas map on my wall back here. And I looked and it says Ozark Plateau. And I was like, I didn't even realize it.
Well,
I'm
is
such
it Petit
a nerd
Jean
for
that you look off the cliff at Petit Jean and it's like from super high, just like, and you can tell how much of a plateau it is right there. Because Petit Jean's Ozarks, right?
Is it?
Petit Jean is also...
I thought Petit Jean was...
Petit Jean might be in the Ozark foothills, but I think...
Let me Google.
So, Mount Magazine and Rich Mountain are Ouachitas. I think Petit Jean is on this side of the river valley.
It is located atop Petit Jean Mountain, adjacent to the Arkansas River, the area between the Ouachita Mountains and the Ozark Plateaus.
So, river valley?
So, yeah, it's considered river valley.
No, but wouldn't it be the edge of the Ouachitas? Because is the river not between Petit Jean?
It's located. It says Petit Jean Mountain, adjacent to the Arkansas River, an area between the Ouachita Mountains and the Ozark Plateau.
Google Maps, man. I don't care what that says. Morrilton.
Okay.
We are currently Google mapping.
We are. We're fact checking. All right. Where's the river? Where's the river?
This is an...
Oh, no. It's Ozark.
Auditory...
Okay. It's Ozark because...
Adventure.
Right well, here. Now I say that...
Does the river cut through look, it? Where part of it's Ozark, part of it's Washtaws? Because that's what's separating them, right?
The well, Ozark... We're
learning here.
No. Okay. Petty Jean is on our side
okay.
of the river, okay? Yeah, it's on our side of the river. But it is... It's literally...
Like the tail
east,
end.
East of Dardanelle. So when you cross over from Dardanelle... across the river to Russellville,
mm-hmm.
and like you get up to Bullfrog Valley,
mm-hmm.
that's the foothills of the Ozarks. Okay,
so we're giving this Petty is the Jean foothills.
This is the foothills of the Ozarks.
Right,
the river's running right through there. Petty mm-hmm. Jean is on our side of the river, in the foothills of the Washtaws. Because look, okay. Washtaw National Forest. Before it transfers Ozarks? Over to Ozark Saint Francis. Listen, I don't care if any of you state park people want to say otherwise. She's on our side of the river.
She's ours.
She's on our side of the river.
She's ours.
We claim her.
Mm-hmm.
In any condition, the Ozarks are a plateau, and I learned that today.
Through a little bit of PhD in pottery.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. Well, it was fun. I look forward to seeing the show.
Me too.
The college has got...
We keep calling it a show. I feel like it might be like a lecture or presentation. But what did he? It was.
He says he's not. He doesn't try to be funny.
But it's called How to Speak Hillbilly in 7 Simple Steps.
Wake up.
Yeah, I was going to say. I think maybe that is why the press release was put out, as it could be comedic, because I think most of us around here already know how to do that.
Yeah.
So we're just going to enjoy the show.
I'm really
calling it a show.
It's a show. I'm there for
it. I'm excited to see it. I might take my mom, too. I think she'd really dig it. She's a nerd for these mountains, too.
Well, Nash wants to go very badly.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He's pumped about it.
We're going to take a whole crew with this.
Nash will corner Brooks, though, later and ask him a million questions.
Yeah, I know
he will. Man, I can just imagine that.
Be rolling. We're going to be rolling on that
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
No doubt. Well, where do we go from there?
So, come on out next
Tuesday, the 12th.
April 12th
at 1:30. Show starts at 1:30. Get there early. Get a seat.
You guys might have to save me one. That's press day.
That is press day.
That's press day. You might have to save me a seat.
Okay.
We'll see. Anyways.
Anything I can do to get out of this office on press day.
Yep. We'll see you there. You arm. Washtaw Center. I might still be here. As Come always.
Say hi to the Chronicles crew at 1:30.
Or at least 2/3 of it. As always, thank you for listening to the Washtaw Chronicles, brought to you by Dawn's Easy Pay and Dawn's Home Store. You can find us, along with other great shows, at thewashtawpodcast.com. You can contact us at thewashtawpodcast@gmail.com, and make sure you find us on Facebook and Instagram and give us a like. Until next time, that's Ashley, Jody, and... Ashley and Jody, out.
Oh, what? No. Ashley, please.
Take me back.
Say producer Trey.
When you gonna stop making fun of me while I'm doing that?
I don't make fun of you. I just mime you.
Jody, what is that? That is literally making fun of someone.
Don't bring the kids into this. Just
who
say producer Trey so we can wrap the show.
Who buys the better Christmas presents?
Yeah, you keep getting me fucking chocolate covered cherries.
Out.
Thank you for listening to the Washtaw Chronicles.